It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy. The 2022 season is days away, and this is our National Football League preview show. You are very welcome along. I've got some list of guests here. Let's start with the man who is below me on the screen as I look. We're still in the old style video screen conferencing here, John Gunnigan, but the world is opening up. Who knows? We might have podcasts in person soon.
We might. What day of the week is it, Rob? You know, we had another show last night, so it's sort of like a show a night at this stage, you know. it reminds me of the old one, that the old joke that Ed McGrail had about ringing up Vinnie Neary in the run into an All-Ireland final one year. And he asked him how he was, and the reply he got was, "Geez, I don't know, Ed, whether it's Tuesday or it's September." So it's a bit like that.
Yes, we were doing a podcast past midnight last night to get ourselves ready for the James Horan special on Patreon. Log on to Patreon, folks, and you can hear from the Mayo's manager, Billy Joe Padden. How are you?
Very good, Rob. I'm good. Looking forward to having a chat about the National League. And I suppose I'm looking forward to getting the action started, because it's always the case this time of year. You just want to see something on the pitch and talk about it. Something real.
I was thinking, you're based like between Armagh, Tyrone, Dublin, Kildare and Monaghan. There's like about five teams and you could be there in an hour. You're perfectly poised here.
Do you know what? I only looked up there yesterday and I'd forgotten the fixtures, and I was absolutely gutted that Armagh Mayo is in Roscommon. Like, either or, Mayo or Armagh would have been fine, but not Roscommon. So that's what I got.
We're homeless. Colm Keyes, how are you? You're coming on a podcast for the only homeless team in Division One.
That's it. Well, Kildare had that in the past too. They used to move their games out of St. Conrad's Park from time to time. So it's not totally unique in this situation, I suppose. It's but I've always wondered about Mayo's home record. There was an issue there that they didn't win all their home games, and not all Division One teams win their home games. I remember doing a couple of pieces about that in the past. Came in around 60% or less, actually, somewhere between 55 and 60% of home games in Division One. It was always Division Three for some reason, and almost consistently, Division Three teams won more of their home games. That was upwards of 60%. Division Four wasn't really in the reckoning. But one of the standouts were that Mayo and Galway were among the poorest teams at home for a long time in the middle of the last decade.
And do you know what, Billy Joe? I've wondered in the past too, and we've said this, that, you know, Mayo go to Tyrone, into a hotel, on the bus. They're not professional players, so they get to experience that. You know, you're down in Killarney, there's the big build-up. Big difference in that and in just rocking up to McHale Park for a have to throw in against Kerry in a home league game. You know, is that a factor?
It is. In some ways, I think I was thinking about this during the week as well. It's nearly, you know, people use the term muscle memory. I don't know, is that it? But there definitely is an association, I think, in the squad with preparation for big games coinciding with a hotel stay, a travel. It's like what you'd have to do around going to Croke Park for a big game. You do the same going down to Kerry or up to Armagh. You meet up on whatever it is, the Friday or the Saturday. You do a bit of a run through maybe the day before the game. You do a bit of tactical or video work. All this sort of stuff in the hotel together I think it's nearly the mental message it sends to the squad more so than anything physical on the pitch, that they're nearly better prepared mentally for the game on those away games.
And there was the issue about the pitch, I think, as well. I think that's undeniable, and that's the reason why the McHale Park is closed now and being redeveloped. So I think it is unavoidable. I think Colm's right. I mean, we have examples of other counties in the past. This is just our turn. It's only three games anyway, so it's no big deal.
Colm, is McHale Park an intimidating venue to go to?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, where are the intimidating venues, really? I think Tralee on a Saturday night in the league can be among the most intimidating venues, certainly that I've covered games in, especially when either Dublin or Mayo are there. Now, Mayo got away, I think, the year they won the league.
We did, yeah. It was a great night, that was. Yeah,
it was a really good game, and Matthew Ruan got away for a goal that night. So Mayo, when the lights are on there in Tralee, it's a great atmosphere, a great venue, and especially the Kerry-Dublin games over the last 2 years, and their meeting, obviously, on Saturday week back down in Tralee. That's a really good fixture. It's a really good fixture and one I think everyone will look forward to, if not attend, certainly watch it on TV, because the draw they had in 2017 and then the game in 2019, where famously Jim Gavin walked around the row at the end without even casting a look. He said, just said everything about him in one respect. He didn't look, he didn't even acknowledge it. And, you know, the natural reaction of some manager would be to get involved and immerse and pull players away. He actually didn't even look at it that night. He walked by. So, yeah, I would think Tralee. Look, obviously, there's the impression that some of the Ulster venues are intimidating. And for a long time, Monaghan couldn't lose a home game in Clonus. And then they lost a number of them. And Mayo have gone to Tyrone and they've gone to Ballybuffet to survive Division 1 of the league in respective years. It was obviously Kevin McLaughlin, if I recall, bailed them out in back-to-back games in Omagh and in Ballybuffet to keep them up. So is there an intimidating venue? I'd say probably Tralee, but nowhere else really. I don't know. Obviously, for anyone going in to play Dublin and Croke Park, I suppose it's a bit of an issue. And obviously not Mayo last August. But on those Saturday night league games, they don't lose too many. And they certainly didn't lose too many in the Gavin era. You could count them certainly in the very low numbers. Tyrone might have won a couple of times. Kerry won a league final there, obviously, but very, very few teams came away with anything. Cork in the early stages. So, yeah, maybe Croke Park in the early stages in the Gavin era and Tralee, but not nowhere really. I don't know how much it counts for an advantage. Maybe a point or two, but nothing major.
The only other places to get mentioned are Aughrim, always gets mentioned. Don't know why, but apparently it's always intimidating. So let's put that in there.
Well, it's probably back to the Battle of Aughrim, conveniently named in 1986 when Laois were league champions and they went into Aughrim for the first round of the first round of the Leinster Championship, and there was a pitch battle
there. That's exactly what it was.
And ever since then, Aughrim has that image of being a very difficult place. It's a very difficult place to find and access. But after that, I don't think it's too much of an issue.
I mean, I think the great thing about the league games is the matches under lights. So you've got some great, you know, I mean, I've been to matches in Park Esler in Newry, the Athletic Grounds in Armagh, place like that. And they're just great occasions. And you're right, Colm. I mean, Tralee is just brilliant.
To support that, John, you know, on a Saturday night under lights in February and into March, on those, they're great occasions, and they're great to visit towns for supporters to go to a town on a Saturday evening and they woke up to the game. And I think a lot of people are really looking forward to this league because it's a return, an unhindered return to the terraces and to the stands for support.
And the really weird thing is that you're at a match on Saturday night, you'll never feel cold. Whereas you could be at the same ground on a Sunday afternoon and you could be chilled to the bone.
Exactly. But if you get a nice crisp night on the terrace watching a game like that, and you've mentioned a few of the venues, I always thought Navan was a great Saturday night venue. So too is Breffni Park. There's just something about places like that that you go in on a Saturday night and watch a game. It's great. And there's a social element for supporters there too. And I think I get the sense from just talking to people in lots of different counties, really looking forward to going to the games. I'm sure players are looking forward to them as well, obviously, but I get the sense supporters really looking forward to getting out and getting around the country.
Billy Joe, we've enjoyed the league over the last few years. And I look at teams like Armagh must be buzzing about being in the league. Your old comrades, I'm sure that's going to be a huge boost to them if they can stay up as well.
Yeah, they probably would feel that, you know, they maybe should have got back to Division 1 maybe a year or two sooner. But I think that, look, their supporters love the league. They love the Saturday night games. They create a great atmosphere. You know, I think the Athletic Grounds is one of the better venues for a Saturday night game. It's absolutely brilliant. Not just because it's close to me here, but it always creates, it's just a really well-sized ground for that sort of crowd that you'll get on a Saturday night. It creates an atmosphere. It's great for club games as well, to be honest. But so, and then when you look at Armagh, and the key thing for them is they've got really some really top class forwards, some really good attacking players. They're going to be in exciting games because they're going to get big scores in games. They're probably going to let in big scores in games. So it's a bit of a roller coaster. And for them, it really will be about, can they outscore a couple of teams early on? And if they can, well, then they'll be a dangerous proposition.
Amazingly, we've talked about venues, and our first venue is Markovic Park, which I have to say, John, is one of the most underrated venues. All right, there's one stand there that's brutal. You just don't want to be in it. It's so low down. But the terraces are fantastic. Love it. Can't wait for it. 12,000 people packed in there. Wow. Should be a bit of an atmosphere.
It should be good. Now, the last time I was there, I think, Billy Joe, you were on the field. Back in 2010, because we were all locked out of the Connacht Championship game there. That was a COVID game behind closed doors. So I think the most recent game Mayo played there would have been that Sligo game in 2010. But it's a lovely ground with Ben Bulbin in the background and all that. And it's a decent sod as well. What size is Billy Joe? Like, what's it like to play on?
It feels bigger than McHale Park. That's from my recollection of playing. It always felt like it was a good quick surface, but not one of the really big pitches that you'd... the open spaces, say, on a Saturday night would be different. I remember like going down to Porky Rin down in Cork. I always felt that was massive on a Saturday night. Maybe it's the surroundings as well. And it was just, you know, obviously Crow Park is massive on a Saturday night under the lights as well. But Markovic Park's not going to give you that feel. It feels very similar in many ways to like the Athletic Grounds or Park Esler. They're all generally around that, other than it has a, you know, much better ground conditions than say somewhere like Ballybuffet or Healy Park, which can get quite soft, or Clonus traditionally.
Yeah, that's interesting because that kind of answers to some degree the criticism from a lot of supporters as why didn't we keep the match in Mayo? And I think like there's two reasons for going outside. One is obviously attendance levels, and there's talk that it could be a sellout at 12,000. So I think that kind of answers the question at that level. But the second one then is the pitch as well, because you know a lot of people were saying, oh, we should play the match of Ballina, but you and I walked that pitch, Rob, the day of the county final, and that's a very heavy pitch, you know, so that doesn't gain you anything. Like that's a heavier pitch than Castlebar, so that's good to hear.
No, just in Ballina's defence, I used to enjoy playing league games there because of the great atmosphere when we used to play league games there, but even then the pitch was heavy, and it was really those heavy Sunday slogs. I remember playing games there. It was slow football, and that's not sort of football Mayo want to play. You're right, John.
Colm, is Mayo Donegal the game of the weekend?
Possibly Kerry Kildare. Now, I expect Kildare will, in terms of the All-Ireland Championship, the overall picture, Mayo Donegal probably is, even though I just have a suspicion Donegal are, I don't know whether they're not progressing forward. I won't say they're going back alarmingly. They still could have beaten Tyrone in last year's Ulster semi-final. Obviously, Michael Murphy missed a penalty and then got sent off. And you see the impact he has when he comes on in the second half of the McKenna Cup. Still the main man. Is there a more valuable player to a team in inter-county Gaelic football? I suspect not. The one man any team can't do without is Michael Murphy for Donegal. But they don't seem to be progressing to me, and I'd have suspicions about their defence. Neil McGee is still back in the picture there, but their ability to lock down really good forwards, I'd have my suspicions about that. And as it happens, Mayo are developing quite a few very good pacey forwards. Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy really made those strides last year, especially. And I suspect that they'll be really looking forward to a campaign. And I think they'll pose a lot of problems for the Donegal defence on this weekend. So I think it probably in the overall context, yes, Mayo and Donegal is, but I'd be looking forward to Kerry and Kildare and to see what Kerry bring. Obviously, there's a Jack O'Connor factor. There's now a Paul Galvin factor, but they're really small sideshows. You're expecting Kerry really to lay down a firm marker, as they did in their first league game last year against Galway. Ultimately, it didn't get them anywhere, but I just see a Kerry team with a lot more conviction even this year.
Interesting. John?
Just on Donegal, just be interested in what the lads' opinions are on them, because, you know, I think you're right, Colm. They seem to have just got stuck at a level and they can't go any further. I remember I was up at the 2019 Ulster match between them and Tyrone, and they were in flying form that day. Like they beat Tyrone and beat them well. They won Ulster. They were being really touted. And then, you know, they didn't progress out of the Super 8s. They didn't progress out of Super 8s the year before as well. So out of two Ulsters, they didn't get a whole pile. And it does look like they've gone backwards since. Now, despite that, they have loads of good young players. But it's not happening for them. I wonder why.
They seem to they seem to have more, a little bit like Armagh, Billy Joe mentioned Armagh, they're top heavy with more forwards than, say, better than defenders. That'd be my impression of it. You see Oisin Gallan not always making the team. He's a really talented player. I mean, when he came on against Tyrone in that Ulster quarterfinal in 2020, Mickey Hart's last match, he really turned the screw on Tyrone that day, but never really kicked on. Didn't make the Ulster final team against Cavan. I thought they were very limp that day. That's the day that I really suspected, are they stuck? Because they came off the back of a big win over Armagh, having beaten Tyrone, and then just got stuck. They didn't. There was nothing about them that evening in Armagh. And they didn't really follow on in last year's championship. Now, notwithstanding that, they just got over Derry. I think a hesitant Derry team in the Ulster Championship last year could have at least drawn with them and maybe brought it further if they had the conviction to shoot. But obviously, Murphy's loss last year was a factor. And I thought that, look, our McKenna Cup or any of these pre-seasons are really a gauge. That looked a decent clip to that game on Saturday evening. And Monaghan were progressing very well, playing very well, I thought. And Murphy comes on, and just his presence alone, don't think Monaghan have a player that can handle someone as physical as him in the absence of Vinnie Corey now. And he really did lift them. I mean, he has that effect, that presence. But I just don't know, have they the defence to really compete with the top teams anymore?
Yeah, no, I just adding on that is that I'd always be a bit wary, though. I can't argue with anything that anyone has said about why Donegal haven't made that step on. But, you know, I think there have been things that have impacted, you know, Murphy, obviously, the cards and missing that game last year. I think, you know, there's been a couple of key moments that maybe have let them down. Like Sean Patton is a great goalkeeper from a restart point of view, but he has made a couple of mistakes. You know, Owen Bann, I think maybe a couple of seasons ago, got injured as well. He's such a huge strike runner for them coming out of defence. So if they can get a bit of luck, maybe get Ryan McHugh back to the level that we know he can play at, even though it's going to be very difficult for him because he's a marked man now and he's having to deal with that extra special sort of Conor Myler attention, as you'd say, even from a half-back position. But if they can get players like Kieran Thompson, Niall O'Donnell and Gallan, as Colin mentioned, to step up and step on again, well then, he's right. They have a serious attack and they are dangerous.
Yeah, and you'd wonder the Tyrone effect, wouldn't you, as well? Because they must have huge regrets about last summer to think, you know, that if the penalty had gone in, if Murphy hadn't got sent off, there's a chance they might have won that game. And then who knows what could have happened. So I wonder, is that playing on their minds this year that, geez, if Tyrone can win the All-Ireland, there's no reason we can't either.
They probably have felt that they could have won an All-Ireland any year, really, had they beaten Mayo in 2019 in Castlebar. Maybe they would have fancied their chances against Dublin. I don't think they would have beaten them. And certainly 2020 feels like the greatest lost opportunity for Donegal because, you know, as Mayo found out, they were pretty close to Dublin at halftime in the All-Ireland final. And for those hesitant few minutes in the start of the second half, maybe a stronger Donegal team could have a more experienced Donegal at that stage, could have really pushed on in the semi-final rather than Cavan and beaten Dublin, who ultimately, when you look back at it, were probably there for the taking in 2020 as well.
Want even more Mayo football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group and ask us anything about Mayo football, all for just €5 a month plus VAT. Go to patreon.com/Mayo Podcast.
Billy Joe, what teams do you think are under pressure? Like, it's making me think that these are two teams that are under a little bit of pressure. Mayo, obviously, on a more fuller scale to try and see can they go over the line. Donegal too. But when you look at the division this year, Kerry as well.
I think that Mayo kind of seem to be always under this pressure. Can you come back from a defeat? And I think Mayo. They're just going to do their thing, and we won't really know for 3 or 4 weeks where they're at. Sometimes we've gone through a league campaign and we think they're gone, and then they resurrect something. From a pressurized point of view, I think the pressure is on Kerry. You know, like at the end of the day, they've all these talented players, they've arguably the best footballer in the country in Clifford. They've Jack O'Connor back for a third stint. He's only back there to win All Ireland. That's all he's done. In some ways, him coming back there has put extra pressure on himself because his expectations will be so high. So I feel that if you look at all those teams in Division One, Kerry have the most pressure on them. You know, there's an element of pressure on Dublin. Can they get back to All-Ireland winning level? And that, to them, I think will be a success. If you take the senior players in that Dublin squad, Kilkenny and the likes, who are still in their prime, Conor Callaghan, they probably know that they might never reach the heights under Gavin of 3 and 4 seasons ago, because that was an all-time team. But at the same time, it would be a huge achievement. They know its achievement that's attainable for them will be to get to a level of winning the All-Ireland, because they still have that talent. They still have that experience. They still have that quality of players. So I think the senior players for Dublin will really, really drive it on this year with that motivation in mind.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Because, I mean, if you look at Kerry in the 80s after the 4 in a row, like the team that came back and won the 3 in a row wasn't as good a team, but they still won the 3 in a row because they were still the best. They were still the best team around, and I think Dublin are going to be dangerous. You know, I think they have been written off, I think, probably too much, I think they will have a point to prove. The Kerry story is just going to be fascinating, I think, because if you look at the McGrath Cup, it's sort of, can we beat everyone by 20 points, you know, and can we keep beating people by 20 points? So it's just a question of are they going too hard and too fast early on, and can they maintain that right through?
Colm, are you looking forward to this season? Do you feel there's a freshness to it?
I do, yeah. And Rob, as I mentioned, I think the supporters being back is one thing, and that spectre of Dublin doesn't really hang over the rest of the championship, and that air of invincibility is gone. And it was probably eroding and slipping away a little bit from 2020 on, and obviously Mayo then accelerated it last summer. So it's gone. And you mentioned pressure. Who's under pressure? Well, as an entity, Kerry are under pressure. Billy Joe is right. They have to come. After the last 3 years, you know, they had the All-Ireland title within their grasp, Dublin down to 14 players in 2019, and they didn't finish it off, and they had possession and lost it, and we know the story there, and Dublin came back. That was Kerry's there for the taking in that scenario, and Cluxton makes that save from Paul Murphy and so many things like that, and I know Killian Spillane gets the goal afterwards, and then they really mess up in Páirc Uí Chaoimh again. Like Donegal, you think there's opportunity here. And last year, I mean, they actually played a lot better than people give them credit for in that All-Ireland semi-final. It was a really tight game. If you remember, they went down into extra time without David Moran, who had a very strong 70 minutes, and Clifford goes off as well. Now, David Clifford missing for 30 minutes, that tips the balance, obviously, in any opponent's favour. And then Tyrone got a little bit of luck, more than a little bit of luck, with the two goals, especially the second Conor McKenna goal. It really fell in his path. So Kerry a little bit unlucky this year, but that not last year, but notwithstanding, the pressure is on them. The pressure is also on Desi Farrell in Dublin. The shelf life for a manager in Kerry without an All-Ireland is about 3 years, and Peter Keane found that. I'd say it's down to two now, even though Desi's an All-Ireland winner. The pressure in Dublin is you do it every 2 years or you're gone. And I would say no All-Ireland in this year. And I think the pressure will come on Desi Farrell. That's how tight it is there. So really, you're comparing it Mayo maybe to Kerry and Dublin. I don't think in the broader scheme, and you may feel it more so, but that's the pressure Desi Farrell is under. Declan Darcy could be waiting in the wings there. I don't know whether he'd be interested, but he'd certainly. I thought it was very striking, Philly McMahon's departing statement specifically mentions Declan Darcy. And you hear that the Declan Darcy would have been favoured around the time too. Desi Farrell had to get that job in one respect as an All-Ireland minor and under 20, one winning twice All-Ireland under 21 winning manager. And he did very well in his first year. And obviously in difficult circumstances, the whole Cluxton issue and then the slip up around the COVID training breach, things like that. So look, he's under pressure, and so too are Kerry.
Colm, can I ask you, I'm going old school here on this, and I just want to ask you, what do you make of Jack O'Connor's approach with Kerry? Because to me, it just seems like he's going back to basics. He's looking for, as Rob said, that ruthlessness, that toughness. Do you think that's something he's focused on in these early stages? You hear stories about them playing fellas that had played Sigerson earlier in the day. It's as much maybe about mental toughness as anything else. How do you...
I think there would be an element of, well, how much do you guys really want it? How far are you going? What are you going to cross? I think one of the biggest statements is pulling Paddy Talley from the middle of Tyrone down through the country to operate as a coach. I think that was a statement that, well, we've tried it our own way and we can't be too, have such a welcome for ourselves as a football county that we can't take a man from the north, from the heart of Ulster, and bring him down to, you know, the kingdom or the home of football or whatever it else it's thought of, and to share his ideas and his concepts and all of that. And I don't think they will suddenly become a defensive team or anything like that, but it's a sharing of ideas. And I just think they've tried a lot of things and now they must try something completely different. And that was the introduction of Paddy Talley. I think it's a very significant factor. He is a good coach. Maybe didn't have it all. It's a very difficult job. The Down job is a difficult job, obviously, when you have some of the best players with Cuckoo there are obviously very club-focused. That's a tough job. But his record, apart from that, he had a good impact with Galway, had a good impact with Tyrone, obviously, when Mickey Hart was there, and with James McCartan and Down. So that's a factor. I think Kerry, there's so much hurt there. They'd almost managed themselves in one respect this year. They will be player driven.
Just on the subject of cross pollination as well, I think Monaghan are very interesting as well, because they have obviously Donny Buckley is there, and isn't Liam Sheedy involved this year as well? Which is
Liam Sheedy is performance
which
coach,
which is quite the ticket. So
it
so
is. And not only is it, it's not as if he is Zoom calling and talking to players by phone. He was very present on the sideline in Omagh last Saturday evening, and he was very Liam Sheedy-ish as well in terms of the way he exhorted and encouraged the players. Now, he didn't deliver the tactical talks or any of that, but I saw him just to the side having one-to-one chats on the sideline there.
So if we could use a rugby analogy for your purpose, Rob, he's this kind of Stuart Lancaster to Banty's Leo Cullen.
Very, very apt analogy there, I think. Mayo go to Monaghan in game two.
Not sure where that leaves Donny Buckley, though.
You know? Well, we can delve deeper into that now, because I have to think of an analogy, but I need to stay on track. I was doing a rugby podcast earlier. Keep me on track here. Mayo played Monaghan in round two, as we know. They're away to Dublin in round three, but to play Donegal in round one. Cullen, just to pivot towards Mayo. We heard from James Horan in our Patreon special today. A lot of our club members were on that. It's interesting that you're saying, you know, Kerry are just having to try new things, think a little bit differently. There's an awful lot of people in Mayo after that All-Ireland final who think that Mayo should be trying new things. And there's a feeling nationally, perhaps at times, that Mayo are very close to just need to keep doing it. What's your thoughts on that idea that Mayo too need to be thinking outside the box this year?
Yeah, every team does. Every team has to come up with something different. Keep doing the same thing. Obviously, it's stated so often, you will get different results. But I think from Mayo's point of view, obviously, people were feeling pretty sore after last year. But when they weigh things up, they're still very much a top four team. No question or doubt, they are stuck there with the top four. The record proves that. And they have two inside forwards now that... Obviously, Killian O'Connor has been there for a long time, and they get him back. And you just think of that full forward line now: Ryan O'Donoghue, Killian O'Connor, and Tommy Conroy. And you ask yourself, is there many better? Possibly at their peak, obviously Dublin with Conor Callaghan, Paul Mannion, and Dean Rock. Yes, but they're a match for anybody if they deliver to their potential, and that's something that they really have to build a team around now. And obviously a lot of ball carriers and a lot of similar style players on Mayo, the very, very quick, that like to break and then support and then waves and all of that. But you would be looking for that quicker ball inside for Ryan O'Donoghue, great ball winner, and obviously Tommy Conroy with the pace as well. And you'd be looking to really integrate a lot more of that and try and deliver it a lot quicker, because obviously the assets are the running halfbacks and the runners from defence. And you have Oisin Mullen there now back, and he obviously missed the Dublin game, and you wonder how fit he really was for the All-Ireland final. But what an advantage to have him back, having almost lost him. And with Killian O'Connor coming back in, it's just another reason for hope after, obviously, a very depressing, from a football point of view, winter for Mayo. But those two, I believe Killian O'Connor will be back, is it, for the third match? Maybe James Horan specified that last night. And
he said rounds four or five, but he could be a round or two out. Yeah. So that could be anything between what, three and six. So who knows? Yeah. Who knows? Well, Billy Joe, you mentioned on that you mentioned in the column last week on the Mayo News about Oisin and how the importance of him coming back. Where would you play him?
I don't think I don't think he's a full back. I don't think he
I don't think anyone thinks that.
No. But no, yeah, I think that's an understatement. I think what I'm trying to say is that I think he's uncomfortable in his decision making in the full back position on the edge of the square there, because his natural instincts is to always try and attack the ball, always to take that risk and play out in front, even when he's marking a man. And sometimes that just hurts you in the full back line. It hurt him. It hurt us in that goal that McShane punched in, because he was way too aggressive in his position and he was too far forward. And I know we can talk about Robbie's role and all that as well, but his position was still wrong. Where it's obvious to me, like, he's a natural halfback. In an ideal world, you play him in the halfback line. You play Paddy Durkin in the halfback line. You play Owen McLaughlin in the halfback line. People tell me you play Sam Callanan in the halfback line. I'm probably missing players here. We just have that abundance of strength there. So the reality is somebody's going to have to play in the full back line. But I think that Oisin, if he is to play in the full back line, I'd prefer to even nearly see him playing cornerback and just pick your poison in terms of the matchups on a given day. That can he really hurt somebody by getting involved, going up the field the way Keith Higgins used to do, and try and do something like that. In an ideal world, I wouldn't have him anywhere near the full back line. I'd have him out the field getting involved in the play. But that's going to be difficult when you consider the strength that Mayo have. And you take Cohen as well into that, played very well at centre back all through last year. He's the captain. He's, you know, huge leadership qualities. He's going to play. So that's all to be factored in. But in saying that, if James Horne found himself in a situation at the end of the league where he was comfortable with a full back line that didn't include any of those halfbacks, I'm talking about Lee Keegan. I didn't even mention Lee Keegan a minute ago. And maybe Callanan could do a job for your cornerback. O'Hora plays fullback. You find somebody else. If Harrison comes back, plays in the other fullback line. Well, then you're looking at the options for Oisin playing midfield or even further up the field are there, because he is that dynamic an athlete. There's an option. There's a real strike runners coming off the bench then, which whether you use McLaughlin or somebody like that coming off the bench. So that would be the perfect scenario for James Horne following 7 league games if he had a comfort level to do something like that.
Here's one, and maybe Colm, your view on this would be interesting, because I do think we've kind of moved, you know, we've experimented a lot, I think, between the full back line and the half back line. But one thing that we haven't done in the way that, say, Tyrone have done so famously is use halfbacks as half forwards, you know, almost seamlessly. Like, I think they look at kind of, you know, middle third people. So the players I'm kind of thinking about are Enda Hessian, Paddy Durkin, indeed, and even Owen McLaughlin. Like, all of these lads, you could play them ahead of midfield rather than just behind it. And as Billy Joe quite rightly says, I mean, we're coming out our ears with halfbacks.
Definitely. You can see some switching between those lines, and probably have to get all those players you mentioned, including Enda Hessian, I would imagine, will have to be on the team to be at your best, and a system will have to be devised. And if you look at Tyrone, they're the prototype Tyrone players. McGeary, Conor Myler, Peter Hart can go both sides. He can go both sides, obviously. So they have about 6 or 7 players that are capable of switching. Frank Burns is another one. They have those players that are seamless. And Mayo could have that too. Now, they're, you know, Paddy Durkin has played half forward against Jack McCaffrey, wasn't it, in the 2019 All-Ireland semi-final? He scored 2 points from there, and he's well capable of scoring and as a defensive half forward. And Enda Hessian can probably play up there. He looks like a player that can break the line from there too. So maybe they're two switches. If you remember, Keith Higgins was having such a good game in the 2013 All-Ireland final at centre forward. Again, that was a seamless transition. So it's not the huge leap, and it probably never has been. It's the fixation with positions. I don't think it should be that great anymore. I often think the only time anyone screams or shouts about positions is for all-star football. I mean, that's it. They nearly have to be 115 for that. But by and large, it can be quite seamless in that middle third. But I'd ask you the question, you know, if you're talking about a Mayo defence, who marks David Clifford? Who marks Conor Callaghan? Who marks Darren McCurry? There are three questions if you're going up against the top teams. And obviously you can throw Michael Murphy into the mix there. But who marks Clifford, O'Callaghan and McCurry? That's the question for Mayo, nearly the first question.
It's a question we can't really answer. I don't think, you know, if Brendan Harrison comes back and comes back to a level, well, then he's the one I'd have most confidence in of doing a job on somebody like Clifford. even McCurry to an extent. I look at what Lee Keegan did last year, and it's remarkable, but all his good work was done, or all his best work was done, kind of coming from a half-back position. O'Hora was, you know, did really well and survived, and some brilliant tackles at different stage dispossessions in those games. But we really are struggling for that sort of nailed-on cornerback since Keith Higgins is gone, since Chris Barrett is gone. And that's the major question that has to be answered for Mayo in this one. If I can just say, can I just say something on the halfbacks playing the half-forward line? I think it's easier for Tyrone to do that because they're a more reactive team where they're more happy to get 12, 13 bodies sitting back. So then those players are facing forward and in a more natural sense, whereas Mayo are much more likely to pressurize the opposition kick out. So then those players that are normally halfbacks find themselves much further up the field. And that, look, you're right though, it is interchangeable and they should be able to adapt to it. But I think the easiest way to adapt to it is if you have a team that drops all the way back and you have those five or six natural halfbacks there, then you have a deadly counterattacking team. And maybe that's something that Mayo could tweak.
Want even more Mayo football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group, and ask us anything about Mayo football. All for just €5 a month plus VAT. Go to patreon.com/Mayo podcast.
Colm, during last year's All-Ireland final, I was in the upper Hogan, and in all my years watching Mayo in major games, I've never felt like the other team had found our playbook as much as I did in that game. The kickouts were so long, so effective, had us so bamboozled. And yes, we had all the chances in the world to make amends and get the scores, and we didn't take them. And we could focus on that. And yes, we could focus on Robbie Henley making a couple of errors, and that's happened before. And we could focus on that if we want, or other individuals. But the bottom line is, it just felt like they just had our number. Did you feel that? What went wrong? And how do we alleviate that in the future or avoid it?
Yeah, I did feel fairly early on that Tyrone had their number, and it was the best Tyrone played all year. They were actually, I thought, better in the final than they were in the semi-final. I would say that. And I felt, obviously, there was a lot of hesitancy. And pretty quickly, I sensed, and I could be completely wrong here, of course, hindsight is great, and I accept all that. But I did feel doubt and hesitancy crept into the Mayo performance very, very early on. 2 point early lead, two points to one. And I think it was after Pádraig Hamsey kicked that wonderful score from beneath the Hogan stand that just got a sense of doubt around again that this is... And look, it's an ongoing issue. There's no point in hiding from it. For Mayo, get to this position. Brilliant. Have produced some brilliant semi-final performances. A couple of very good All-Ireland final performances. Obviously, 2017 was really, really good and a magnificent game. But 2020 and 2021, and I know it's a developing team and that, but it just looked, there was hesitancy and doubt there at times when you thought that maybe they're getting control. And I don't know what that is. Maybe it's a legacy issue from previous. Maybe it is. And maybe it's something that maybe could be publicly acknowledged. It might be cathartic in some ways that you say, well, it's there and let's move on. You know, that's something else, and that's obviously a management and a player issue. But it just feels that there is elements of hesitancy there, and early on in that first half, that there was never a sense that there were, even though they came from 8 down in the semi final, you would think, well, they're gone here, but it just never came at all. And obviously, when you don't get some of those chances early on, those doubts grow. So,
Billy Joe, just on that, do you think there's going to be any sense of a hangover from that for Mayo this year? Because I certainly get the sense that there is for supporters, you know, because I think up to now the supporters have been well invested in the whole Horan project, or if you like, the modern Mayo project. But certainly since September, since the final, I've never seen such grumpiness amongst large swathes of supporters. So as we were saying on the Patreon podcast last night, I just sense that Horan doesn't have enough rope, as much rope this year as he's had in previous years, and it won't take long for a significant minority to get on his back this year if things don't go according to plan. So would you detect that kind of mood music coming into this year for us? And if so, how do we react to it?
I think from the supporters' point of view, I think you've gauged it. You know, you'd have your handle on it as good as anyone, John. That's for sure. I think that's a fair assessment of a lack, maybe, or a sign of patience waning with the team, with the manager, with the backroom team, coaching staff, the whole lot. And I think they'll be just be there'll be less understanding if Mayo don't start the way we expect them to be. And that doesn't necessarily mean all about getting points. If we as supporters look at this Mayo team that we've known so well for the last 10 or 12 years, and we start to see them trying to do something different, and it doesn't pay off with points on the board, Well, I think we can understand that, because you know, if you're not a hypocrite, we all recognize that we wanted to see something different maybe from the Mayo team than in the last couple of seasons. But just as Colin was speaking there, I think the one thing that will be addressed, that James Horne will address with the squad, is in those situations, like that after 20 minutes against Tyrone, is where's the bravery? And I don't like using the word bravery when you're talking about your own county, because you're insinuating that people are cowards, and that's not what I'm doing at all. I'm just saying that Gaelic football now is such a risk-averse game. And I just felt, I just feel sometimes this Mayo team is at their absolute best when they take risks, when they're brave in possession, when they go and try to make things happen. And that wasn't the case in that All-Ireland final. It was too tight. I think that's something that James Horne will address. I think it's the sort of football James Horne wants to play. And I think we might see some more, it'll be something that'll be a focus of this team in the league, to really go for broke in those situations, unlike that All-Ireland final.
Colm, this might be a very tough question as we wind up, but I just have to ask you, do you think James Horan ultimately feels that he had the system in place and the players didn't deliver? Or do you feel like he's questioning and has questioned a lot? I mean, we've asked him this, he's answered as best he could, but no one's ever going to get inside his mind. But what's your best kind of guess of his mindset coming into this campaign, and where maybe the pressure he might feel under himself?
I think obviously going into the All-Ireland final, having beaten Dublin and beating them in a way where there was counter-attacking and getting, you know, driving forward in numbers through Keegan and Durkin and Hessian when he came on the field, that you got a sense that, you know, we have something here. And obviously the Tyrone kickouts and the length, and obviously the second goal came from that. But there was numerous kickouts that went so far, and Mayo didn't look all that prepared beneath them. In hindsight, they didn't really look like they dealt with them too well. I thought some players were left on the field too long in the second half too, and that's one for reflection. When things clearly were not going well for them, snapshots, bad shots, all of that, that probably needed adjustment a lot quicker. And I think James Horne is reflecting on anything. I think there's probably a 10-minute period in the second half there where he'd look at, you know, who was left on the field too long, and, you know, he'd be looking for those signs again to say, we got to act quicker here. I think for sure some players remained on the field for that bit too long when, you know, some of the shots that were taken, and, you know, there was a bit of detachment there from others, that you really got to shake it up and have players ready for certain situations to come in. And obviously some of the substitutions last year were very good, Hessian being one that really, really worked against Dublin. But, you know, you got to be mindful of Tyrone, the type of game they played too. And I just thought that their kickouts really worked, having not worked in the semi-final against Kerry so well, that was an advantage that they really got over Mayo that day.
Okay, we'll round the house for a specific question for each of you, and then maybe as best you can, like, I'm not even sure if anyone can pretty call who's going to win a league, but I will get you to kind of call who might be relegated, because that's where the real interesting stuff is, which team may not perform. But yeah, Billy Joe, what do you like? This is a really general question, but what do you want from this league campaign for Mayo?
Survival. It's all I ever want from a league campaign. The most important thing for a team like Mayo is to be in Division One, to be blooding these young players, Sam Callanan, McHugh, even Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy, to be continuing to develop. Jordan Flynn's going to get a chance in midfield in this league. The Division One is the place to do that. We talked about earlier on Saturday night games in Kerry or in Croke Park, that they're good experiences to get. When I was a player, they were the games you look forward to, because they were the games you had to test yourself. It gave you confidence if you could perform reasonably well there for any championship game that was coming down the road, even though you recognised that the levels were gone up and up again. So if you're a young player, it's the place to learn. So all that matters for Mayo is to get enough points to stay in the division, blood a couple of other young fellas, get Killian back, get Lee Keegan back playing a bit of football. And I think as well, we haven't mentioned it yet, but it will be interesting to see how the latter stages of the league look, and how teams treat them when you consider the championship is so quickly around the corner.
That was going to be my question for Colm Keyes. Colm, yours is a structure one. How interesting is the, how much more interesting is the league because the championship is right there, right after it?
Well, obviously not so, yeah. Obviously there isn't much room for rotation and experimentation. You want your best team, you want the knowledge of your best team in the closing stages of the league, because really for most teams, you know, if you play your last round and you don't get to a league final, you're probably out within 3 to 4 weeks. Most are out in 3 to 4 weeks. Some will have a 5 week gap. But even that's a lot less than what it was. I mean, there was times when the gaps were 11 weeks here, but not anymore, obviously, with the split season. The longest you'd be waiting around is 5 weeks. So that does not give you long to get things right. So all the players who are intent on playing really have to be surfacing towards the end of the league and getting on with it, or even the middle of the league to the end of the league, certainly, but the middle of the league getting on with it from there. So it does make a big difference. Obviously, for Division 2 teams and Division 3 teams, there's a lot more at stake, because if you don't reach a provincial final from Division 3 or 4, you remain rooted in the Tailteann Cup. So that could keep out Cavan and Tipperary, potentially, who are last year's or 2020 provincial champions. So really, it's fast-paced, it's breakneck. There won't be huge experimentation or rotation. I'd say by round 3, round 4, most managers will want every player out on the field when they can, so that they can really sort out their team and have them ready to go within 3 weeks. And there's obviously some key games. And, you know, I think the key game for Mayo is Croke Park. I think it's the third round, isn't it? Mayo, Dublin, third round. That's not a fixture that has gone well for Mayo in the past. Did it have much consequence afterwards? Well, I always thought it had some consequence, probably up to last year. It'd be very important for Mayo to follow on in Croke Park and build on what they did last year and not deliver some of the performances that they have had on Saturday nights in Croke Park. They've been very poor in some of those games and relied on some good goalkeeping, I think, 1 year from Rob Henley to stay in touch, I think around 2019. David Clark as well produced heroics to stay in games. So they really need to consolidate what they got in that game, in that third game.
John, what's exciting you about the league?
Well, I do think the fact that it is condensed will make it exciting. And I think the fact that momentum in this league is going to be so important, not for winning the league, because I don't think anyone gives a monkey's about winning it, but it's a question of the momentum that you take into the championship. Because in our case, like, we're out against Galway in a kind of quarter final within a few weeks of the league finishing. And that's absolutely huge because, you know, I know the qualifiers that would be shortened after that for whoever loses. But at the same time, it's a hard road that you want to go on. So momentum is going to be really big. But I guess at a more basic level, if you like, you know, I think we touched on this already. Isn't it great to be going back to matches again with big crowds and all the rest? You know, our lives have been on hold for 2 years, lads. You know, it's great. It's great to be back.
I don't care who you are, whether you're a fan of Limerick footballers or Mayo footballers or anyone in between. If you're kind of on the fence about whether you're going to go along to the match of the weekend, come on! After all this.
But Rob, do you remember, like, back in 2019, myself and Joe, my son, in the summertime decided we were going to go to a match every Sunday or every weekend. We didn't care where it was, who was playing. We didn't know a dog in the fight at all.
Did you know the pandemic was coming?
Yeah. Do you remember, lads, we were all in Clonus one day during that phase. And we've kind of looked back on that era as this halcyon era in almost in another world, another time, another place. So it's great. We're already planning our summer off the back of that.
Well, I'm off to delete the league-winning podcast because you just said no one gives a monkey about winning the league, and I sounded a little bit too excited in that podcast.
That
now
was
that I think about it.
That was
That
was pre-COVID, Rob. You know, different world.
We need to do a 2022 update. We sound very excited in this. We didn't know that it wasn't the promised land that we're heading towards. Anyway, enough of that. Listen, we're off to what I'm calling the smoking area for our Patreon listeners, where we're going to do some any other business. So the lads have to think about that. But for all of you listeners online, thanks for joining us. We'll be back within a week where we'll have all the review of the big day in Donegal. But join us on Patreon for James Horan interview special, for Stephen Drake and Gerard Flanagan were picking the team last week. Last week, they were picking the team. James Horan didn't even know who his squad was. The lads have it picked. No problem to them. And we'll have another special just before the game on the weekend. Thank you, Colm.
Thank you very much, lads. Great to talk to you.
Hang around for the smoking area. Billy Joe, you too. But thanks a million.
You're welcome.